Welcome to Clearing the Clutter Inside and Out with Julie Caraccio. Every Tuesday at 1 p.m., Julie interviews experts on all areas of clutter, physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional. A clutter coach and professional organizer, Julie also offers tips to help you get clutter-free for a more joyful and fulfilling life.
Hey everyone, today we're going to be talking about kitchens. If you're trying to eat healthier or lose weight and your kitchen's full of clutter, you're not going to be able to do that. What if you run a small catering business out of your home or make homemade goods that you sell? If your kitchen's in disarray, you're probably not as being as efficient as you should be. I'm also really excited because today's guest has a unique take on organizing kitchens that I've never heard of. So I'm sure that I'm going to be learning some tips today about getting my kitchen much better organized. All right, I'm going to tell you about today's guest. Kitchens hold a special place in Allison Lush's experience. She is a diplôme d'études professionnelles in French cuisine from the Institut de Tourisme et d'Hôtellerie de Québec and 17 years in catering kitchens, frequently in private homes. She currently shares her time between professional organizing and working on catered events as a maitre d' and chef. All this combines to provide her with a powerful set of skills she uses to help clients in their own kitchens and in creating their own events. For the last 4 years, she has been studying with the Institute for Challenging Disorganization and has earned a number of certificates. She is currently a candidate for Professional Organizer Certification specializing in chronic disorganization. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you so much, Julie. It's an honor to be here with you today.
Now, please correct my French. I know that I butchered that. The last time I took French was in high school, so for everyone, please pronounce correctly where you studied.
The Institut de Tourisme et d'Hôtellerie de Québec.
Yeah, not even close, but you know what? I give myself an A for effort on that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, so let's get started.
Yeah.
We have lots of good stuff to talk about that. What are the common reasons you have found that kitchens get cluttered? And again, you have such a unique background with your catering as well as organizing that I bet you see things that others haven't.
Well, the first thing is that in our lives, our behaviors change. Our lifestyle changes, the things that we own changes, and as with the rest of our environment, if our environment is not kept up to date with our actual behaviors, clutter occurs. That's the number one reason. So doing a refresh, a reboot on our lifestyle and what we actually need is the number one step to dealing with clutter in the kitchen or anywhere in the home.
Excellent. What have you found? Have you found common some of the consequences of having a kitchen that's very cluttered? You know, my observation is if it's really cluttered, you might not want to cook a healthy meal and you're just going to grab something pre-packaged. Or, you know, I know in my home my home is organized and clutter-free in the kitchen. I just like to bake and eat too much, so that's why we just eat too much, at least we're aware of it. But we keep all our medicines in the kitchen. And if, you know, again, if that's an area that's cluttered, you might not be compliant with your meds. What have you found?
Clutter can occur from anything. If we start, first of all, by looking at what do we own? Do we use it? Is it current for our lifestyle now? Does it have a home? That's an extremely important step. If we need to have it, where do we use it? If you need to have your meds in the kitchen because that's when you remember to take them, then it's perfectly appropriate to have them in the kitchen. They just need to have a home. So they need to be perhaps visible to you, so maybe like a basket on the counter, maybe next to the peanut butter, whatever works for you. One of the golden rules in organizing, which is the key to decluttering, one of the golden rules is look at your own life and how you live. There are no rules about how we should live, how we should organize. What works for you is what works for you. It's your home. It needs to be fluid so that you can get through your day without feeling that you're in traffic jams all the time. I need to get from point A to B, point B, but there's all this crap in my way and all this wasted time. So we need to figure out what those blockages are and work through them so that we can get what we need done quickly and smoothly so that it works well in our homes. And decluttering is one of the best ways to do it. But the first step is looking at how we live and figuring out our individual lifestyle. Comparing ourselves to other people is a wasted energy. If we look at other people, it should be simply to look at examples of how we can find solutions that work for us. not comparing.
Excellent. I think just in general, we shouldn't compare ourselves to anyone in life, because that usually has a negative consequence unless it spurs you, again, as you're saying, to get motivated. Now, have you noticed certain areas, maybe like cookbooks or a leftover area in the kitchen that just seems to attract clutter maybe more than other areas?
No, I would say absolutely every area of the kitchen attracts clutter, really. So if we take the first thing that you mentioned, recipes, that's a whole subject in itself, and I thought about it an awful lot and took a lot of notes and thought about all the different systems I've had over the years and what I've seen in other people's homes to try to be able to answer this question. What I would say is that, like with any collection that we have in our life, recipes can accumulate clutter. The most important thing about having a collection is being able to retrieve. It's like a filing system, right? So why do you keep papers? You keep them because sometime in the future you're going to need to access it. So if you're having recipes, the most important key is a system. It doesn't make any difference if you use handwritten recipes, if you have them in a binder, if you have books, if you have them all digital. It doesn't make any difference, whatever you're comfortable with, whatever responds to you and feels comfortable, but they need to be organized in a way so that you can put your hand on the recipe that you want easily. If you have tons of recipes and you can never find anything, you'll feel discouraged and you won't use them, and then they're just taking up space for no reason at all. So I encourage people to be minimalist, to keep only the recipes that they think they might actually use. One of my most successful systems was that I took the recipes I really like, I photocopied them, and I put them in those plastic sheet protectors in a binder and put them in sections. So now if I'm looking for a soup recipe, I just go to my soup section. If I want a cookie recipe, I go to my cookie section. They're all right there. And the bonus is I can take that plastic sheet out and tape it to my kitchen cupboard while I'm cooking, right in front of my face. So I have no books on the counter. I don't get any books nasty and dirty. You can get an iPad or tablet support that you can put on your kitchen cupboard if you're using digital recipes, same thing. Or you can print out the recipe and tape it to your cupboard. It's all about retrieval and using it. If you've got a collection and it's stagnant and you can't access it, it's just taking up space for no reason. And on the subject of recipes, I just want to add one more thing I think is really important, and this is from my own experience. Not all recipes are created equal. Tons of recipes are published and they're crap because they haven't been evaluated thoroughly. They haven't been tested. They're just thrown out there after, oh, this is a good idea, I'm going to make a recipe. They throw it out publicly, but it's an investment for us. If I choose a recipe, I'm choosing to invest my time and my money, and I want it to turn out well. So I strongly encourage people to be wary and to be critical. And when you find a recipe that worked for you, try another recipe from the same source. And be critical of the results and say, ask yourself, it's like going to a restaurant. Did you go to the restaurant? At the end of the at the meal, you ask yourself, did I like that meal? You do that because you want to know if you should go back. Do the same thing with your recipes, because it's an investment, just like going to the restaurant.
Oh, that's an excellent tip. Now, I have to ask you, I love that that system works. I don't know if it would work for me, but it works for you. Do you own cookbooks?
I used to have a huge library of cookbooks. And then after a certain point, I realized I was never using them. And they were taking up valuable space, and they were depressing me because they were sitting on the shelf almost mocking me like I should be cooking all the time. And I didn't want to cook that much. I wasn't being really honest about the role cooking was playing in my life at the time. So I downsized them gradually. And a really good trick about decluttering in general in our lives, and this applies for the cookbooks, is that you get rid of the things that you know that you're willing to get rid of. And the stuff that you're not sure about, I ask myself two questions. Can I easily replace it? If I get rid of it today and tomorrow I'm kicking myself, could I go out and replace it? So that's a really good way of letting things go out the door without having to feel afraid. If it's something that's irreplaceable, like say it's my grandmother's cookbook recipe book, and I know I'm never going to use it, but I'm sentimentally attached to it and I feel badly, I put it in what I call the ripening box. I have one box in my house, and I put things in there if I don't know if I'm going to let them go. I have to let it simmer a little bit to see if I'm willing to let it go. Some people call it the agony box, things you agonize over. So you put it in the box, and then you walk away, and then when you come back to it later on, often the decisions seem much clearer after they've been sitting in that box for a while.
Excellent tip. I've also used, I love about the recipes, I never thought about it that way until you mentioned that. I have luckily have found great recipes on Pinterest, but what I do, when I try it and I like it, I move it over to Evernote. And so it's on my iPad. So that's how I have a place, I set it on the counter and it's tagged, and Evernote works really great for that. Now, I would love if you'd have suggestions. In my personal and professional experience, Tupperware container seems to can just take over a kitchen. I've seen that. You know, I have, my husband works a swing shift, so I make dinner for him 5 nights out of the week and have to pack it, and I make sure he has a vegetable and his main course. And so, you know, that's something I use, glass containers, because that's important. But what tips would you have for us for Tupperware?
Well, the first thing is to recognize that food containers are a tool in the kitchen. We tend to think of them like a disposable something, like a Ziploc baggie. But the difference between a Ziploc baggie and a Tupperware container is quite significant. The Tupperware container or glass lock or whatever it is you use, doesn't matter what you use. Whatever you feel good about is what works for you, and that's what you should be using. You have to feel as good as you possibly can about the tools that you're using, because it's going to make you want to invest money, it's going to make a good investment, and it's going to make you want to use it, which is good. We want the equipment in our kitchen to be used. We don't want to just buy stuff and fill up our cupboards and let it sit there. So you want to feel a magnet towards your tools. So choose tools that speak to you and feel comfortable. And often people are tactile, so the way it feels is more important for some people than others. Or the way it looks, if we're more of a visual person, the way it looks is going to be much more important to us. So choose ones that matter to you. Secondly, it's an investment. So it's a good idea to think about the investment that you're making. It's easy to go out and just buy more Tupperware, this kind and that kind. But if we bring home 2 or 3 or 4 brands of Tupperware, which most people have, by the way, most people, in my experience, I've been in thousands of kitchens over the years, most people have 5 or 6 different brands and styles and sizes of Tupperware, and none of the lids fit anything. Everybody's got the same challenge. So what I do now in my home, and it took me years to get here because it's all about evolution, it doesn't matter where we are, we start off today and we look at how we live and we examine in order to improve whatever it is so that tomorrow we can be better off than we are today. No point in judging ourselves either. Don't let other people judge us, but don't judge ourselves either. Just evolve. So what I do now is I have invested in one brand of plastic containers that I like, that are comfortable for me. They were more expensive, but I like them. I want to use them. All the lids are interlocking and they're simple, so I only have one kind of lid in my cupboard, and I take care of them because they were an investment. So I watch them. I don't just let them walk out the door and not come back. One additional comment, though. In many households, for example, if you have lots of young kids, or if you have, for example, grown kids that come and visit and you want to send home leftovers with them, you need to have a certain supply of sort of disposable food containers that you're willing to give away to people, and you don't have to worry about them coming back. So even if you have nice stuff that you like that's good for you on a daily basis, keep a little bit of the sort of disposable stuff at the back of the cupboard so that you can give people food if you want to, and you don't have to feel badly about the container.
That's an excellent point, because you know what? When I have people, we do a monthly Sunday brunch, and if I send leftovers, I'm like, get the container back to my husband or get it to me, because I don't want a ton of them. I want the glass that are BPA free. That's something that's important to me. So I will have to think about that. That's a good suggestion for me to do, because they're kind of like books for me. I'm like, just make sure they're returned. Now, I'm very excited to talk about this, because when we first were talking and setting up the interview, you have a really unique approach when you go help a client organize a kitchen. You ask them, and this is where you start, are you a chef, cook, or a gallery slave? And I want to know, one, why you start there and how that helps eliminate clutter.
I start there because that's a really simple way to help a person start thinking about and looking at themselves and thinking about how food preparation appears in their life. If a person is like a galley slave, that could be someone who has young kids, it could be someone who has a big family, it could be someone who has boarders, it could be somebody in all kinds of different circumstances. Those people, there's an awful lot in common with their food preparation situation as with a professional kitchen, if you think about it. So high volume, repetitive, maybe a difficult clientele. So if you look at the professional kitchen situation, you can find parallels and clues as to how to respond and set yourself up so that you avoid clutter. So, for example, meal planning becomes much more important. Find recipes that are reliable so that your clientele are going to like what you're cooking so that you're not left with leftovers, which creates clutter in your fridge. Teach people how to cook so that they can help you. That's a great way. That's a great thing to do. There shouldn't be one person in a family cooking for eight people day after day after day, unless the person really enjoys it. For example, it's possible in some families that that works, but in a lot of families, it's just like a default mechanism, and everybody should learn how to cook, I think. It's a should. Yes, it's a should. I think that because we have to eat our entire lives, the more cooking skills we have, the more independent that we are, the more confident that we are, and this all ties into clutter and economy, because the more we're able to cook for ourselves, the less we spend on delegating that responsibility to the people who bring us takeout food or the restaurants that feed us or buying prepared meals in the stores. There's nothing wrong with that, having that lifestyle. I'm not judging. All I'm saying is that if you invest in basic cooking skills for yourself, then you have the choice. You have the choice. And further to that, and this is really important because it's all really related. I was trying to figure out how to just answer one question, but they all overlap so much. If you have basic cooking skills, and they're not difficult to get, there's cooking classes all over the place, and all over the place on YouTube as well. There's a million people teaching basic cooking things on YouTube. It doesn't cost anything. It could take 3 minutes, 5 minutes to learn one basic cooking skill. How to hold a knife, how to chop a melon, how to do anything. You can find it on YouTube, I guarantee you. So start bit by bit and add to your skill package. And the reason why this is so key, not only because it fits in really well with having a healthier lifestyle, being able to cook for yourself, cook food that you like, save money because you're feeding yourself when you want to. You don't have to do black and white. It doesn't have to be you cook everything for yourself and everything from scratch. Just a couple meals a week already. If you don't do it already, it makes a big difference. But if we have basic cooking skills, then we're much less likely to buy gadgets. If you know how to use a knife, you're not going to go out and buy five different tools that teach you that will cut stuff for you, which if you bring them home, maybe they don't work well. How often do you actually need, you know, vegetables that are in long matchsticks? How often do you need that? If you learn how to do it with a knife, you don't have to have that thing cluttering up your cupboard. You don't have to waste that money. You don't have to feel guilty that you bought it. And you just have a knife, and you learn how to use it.
Wow, that's excellent. Although it seems I need some knife skills. That would be, because I've never taken a class, but you know, you're right. There are tons of videos on YouTube, and that would be a good place to start. Now, would you have any thoughts?
One comment, please, Julie. When I went to cooking school, it was a year and a half long, my cooking school. We spent the entire first week just learning how to cut vegetables and fruit.
Wow.
That's the very, very first thing that they taught us, how to cut vegetables and fruit for a whole week. That's how key and fundamental it is. So if you're going to do one thing to improve your cooking skills, I strongly recommend go to YouTube and learn how to cut fruits and vegetables.
All right. You've convinced me. I'm there. Now, do you have any thoughts? I would classify myself as definitely a baker. It's something I love. It brings me joy. When I would start a new job, I would bake fresh cookies, and that became a routine for me. It was just a way to kind of break the ice when I walked into a new place. I'm not gourmet on a couple things. I'm learning Italian fairly well, but more in that cook gourmet thing. Do you have any thoughts for me, since I'm kind of nebulous in those categories?
I don't think anybody really fits neatly into any category, quite frankly. I think that it really is beneficial to sort of pretend that you're holding a mirror in front of yourself all the time when you're in the kitchen and look at what you're doing and ask yourself, first of all, how do I feel about it? Am I enjoying what I'm doing? If I'm really enjoying making cookies, if that really makes pleasure for me, then whatever it is you need to make cookies deserves to have more room in your kitchen, and you can invest in more equipment if that's necessary, for example. If you really enjoy making homemade pasta, if that gives you pleasure, if you enjoy eating pasta and you want to go further, you don't have to be a gourmet cook. You can buy yourself a pasta maker and learn how to make pasta. You don't have to be a chef in order to invest in those things, but whatever it is that you do, it should reflect who you are. It should come organically out of you and your lifestyle and your interests and your pleasure.
I love that. And you know, I'd love to know if you have any tips on ways that can help us eat healthier. I know that my big thing, I decided that, you know, we're cutting down on baking, but I'm making more of an effort to make as many meals home cooked as possible. And what I decided that even if I made a homemade dessert that week, that, you know what, it had to be better than all the preservatives and everything else if I was eating and frozen food. So we've really gotten away from that. But what do you have any advice for people in their kitchens when they're trying to eat healthier?
One of the easiest things, one of the elements about eating on a daily basis is that frequently we don't have time. So, for example, I'm in a rush, I'm running out the door to go to work, but I want to have a healthy lunch, I want to take food from home, not only because it's healthier, but because it's probably more economical too, but I don't have time to do anything. So one of the best things that we can do is take a clue from professional cooks, what they do. I don't know what it's called in English, it's called mise en place in French. And what that means is they will take all kinds of food and they will prepare it in a first step and put it in containers in the fridge. So, for example, when I go to some of my clients' homes, older people or handicapped people or people who just want to eat more healthy, I will strongly encourage them, for example, to take 5 or 6 carrots and peel them and cut them and put them in water and put them in the fridge. That way it's an easy grab thing. I've seen images on the internet of people who prepare snacks and lunches for their kids, and there could be like a whole tray in the fridge full of little Ziploc baggies that have little tiny portions in them, or whatever containers you want, little tiny portions already, so you just grab and go. So that's a really, really easy way to prepare things ahead of time. Another one, it would be, for example, making an energy bar. Instead of eating granola bars, we often need a boost of energy in the middle of the day. There are many recipes with really literally 2 or 3 or 4 ingredients, like the most basic things that you can imagine. You throw them in a food processor, you mix them all up, sometimes you just mix them into a ball and put them in the freezer or whatever, and then you've got these energy balls and you know exactly what's in them because you made them yourself. You can make a big batch, so it's very economical in terms of your time, and you can grab it and run out the door. So it's a very good way to give ourselves energy and keep us healthy and keep us moving without wasting our money on prepared foods and without eating things that we don't want to be eating.
Excellent. Now, do you have any thoughts for when you're organizing the fridge and you know, if you buy vegetables and ways to keep them around longer?
There's just too many vegetables and fruit to be talking about here on our conversation because we would get into just too much detail. We'd get off topic. I would, again, strongly recommend doing research on the internet. The internet is really our friend. Today, it's easy to get overwhelmed, but on the other hand, it's a very, very useful tool. One of the best sites, if it's okay for me to say this, one of the most valuable sites, it's the one that I go, it's my number one go-to site on the internet for anything having to do with food and cooking and recipes, is cooksillustrated.com. And they have recipes which are very seriously tested. I've got an extremely high rate of success with their recipes, like 98% of their recipes I'm happy with because they've tested them backwards and frontwards and upside down and had people test them before they publish. And they give you the whole story about why the recipe works. So when I read the story, it's a cooking lesson for me at the same time. Also, they have equipment reviews. Whenever I want to buy a new piece of equipment, like a knife or a cutting board or even ingredients, they have ingredient reviews as well, like canned tomatoes or yeast or whatever. They help me understand what it is I'm buying and how best to use it, so it makes me more confident in the kitchen, even though I already, you know, I have all these years of experience and professional training. I'm learning all the time, constantly expanding my base of understanding and the tools that I use and my comfort and my pleasure in the kitchen because I keep learning. So that's one site that I really, really like. And the reason you originally asked me about that was the go-to place, recipes.
Well, if your fridge, if you had any thoughts for organizing the fridge or fruits and vegetables to store longer.
I would do the question on their website. That would be the first place that I would go. Because they are so reliable, because they are so careful about the information they give, I would go to them and I would do a search saying food storage in the fridge and see what comes up. That's the first thing that I would do.
Oh, fantastic. I've never heard of that site, so I'll be excited to check that out later. Now, do you have any tips if someone has a small kitchen? What would you say to them in terms of clutter and organizing? What's your advice?
I have a small kitchen. And I used to live on a sailboat, and I know lots of people who have teensy-weensy kitchens, so it's something that's very, very familiar to me. It's not a reason to not enjoy your kitchen. There's no reason why you can't enjoy your kitchen, even if it's really small. It just means that you need to be more disciplined. So the stuff that stays in your kitchen has to earn its keep. It has to deserve being there. It has to reflect your lifestyle. Secondly, clean up as you go. So you don't need to have four mixing bowls. Have one mixing bowl or have two mixing bowls and wash them as you're going along, just like professionals do, and then reuse it again. You can use the same mixing bowl five different times in a recipe as long as you wash it as you're going. You don't need five knives. You can use one or two knives and wash them again. Knife blocks, that's a real Achilles heel for me. Knife blocks, if you have a big kitchen, you can afford to keep it, whatever, but they take up a huge amount of counter space, and for some people it's visual clutter as well. So I would encourage people to explore options of storing their knives in a different, safe way. My favorite way, I have two ways. One is a knife magnet on the wall. It's very discreet. It's very safe. It protects the blades. There's no rubbing on the blades, so you keep your sharp knife, which is very, very important. A dull knife is the most dangerous thing in the kitchen. Your knives need to be sharp, because if they're sharp, they will go through the food. If they're not sharp, you're going to fight with it, and they could slip. I've lost parts of my fingers because of dull knives, literally. So I strongly recommend you keep your knives sharp and protect them. Wall magnet is a great idea. There are also different vertical knife holding containers that you can get that are much more discreet than a knife block, a wooden knife block on the counter. Also, anything that you can store on the wall in a small kitchen. Use your walls, use the inside of your cupboard doors, attach things so that they're hanging, because that way you can find them very easily. For example, I have my funnel. I have two funnels. I use a big one and a small one. I use them every week, and I have them hanging on a little hook on the inside of my cupboard door, so I always know where they are. They're not buried. That's another thing that's really important. A key for all kitchens, but it's a bigger challenge in small kitchens. When you give things a home, don't pile unless it's absolutely necessary, because when you pile things for storage, you're going to have to lift out a whole bunch of things to get at the thing you want, and it's very discouraging. It's going to impact how often you use that thing. It's going to impact how often you work in the kitchen and how often you choose to work in the kitchen or cook things out of pleasure. Because it's just going to be another roadblock. It's like a traffic jam. As much as possible, give yourself little extra shelves inside your shelf. If your shelf is really tall, cut it in half vertically. You can build yourself a little support out of wood. You can buy them in the store. There's millions of them. Well, not millions. There's a whole bunch of them available. And just vertically separate it so that things aren't piled. You just take it out what you need. Also, utensils. If you have a very small kitchen, you probably are very short of drawer space. There's lots of things you don't have to put in a drawer. You can put a canister, like a porcelain canister or an earthenware canister, on top of your counter and have all of your big utensils standing up in it. Currently in my kitchen right now, I have a small wicker basket, a square wicker basket on my counter with little containers to give separations inside, and that's where I have all my forks and knives, right on top of my counter, because my drawers are just stupid for my utensils. Think outside the box. Find other solutions. You don't have to put it in a drawer just because most people do.
Oh, I love that. Now, do you have any final thoughts or anything that you felt we needed to discuss on kitchen clutter, kitchen organizing, whatever you want?
I think it's worth repeating that organization and kitchen skills are a lifetime journey. I think it's really, my personal belief is that it's really important to accept who we are and where we are today and just look at it as an adventure. And just build on whatever it is we've got, try to honor what we've got, and give ourselves credit for what we've learned already and what we're doing well, and build on that, and look for patterns. I'm really good at organizing this, but I'm not so good at organizing that. What can I learn from what already works for me, and use those skills to build on building other ones? The key to avoiding clutter in the kitchen, fundamentally, is good organization. And the key to good organization is figuring out who we are and how we live. So you sort of have to dig down and dig down and dig down in order to understand. But the benefit is, and this is really, really key, the more we learn about ourselves, the more we're going to be able to organize ourselves everywhere in our lives, including the kitchen, because it's always changing. Your habits change, your lifestyle change, your family composition changes, your job changes, your taste in food changes, your health situation changes, your body size changes, your physical ability changes. So we're all going to be organizing our entire lives. It's never going to be a static thing where you do it once and that's it. You got to come back to it and ask yourself again, if you're seeing clutter, it's a sign that the system is no longer working. It's no big deal. Just go back to it and tweak it and figure out what's the part that's not working anymore and tighten it up and make it work for you better, and then it'll be fine for a while. And then if it's starting to be clutter again, oh, there's obviously a problem. I got to go back and tweak it a little bit. And then just keep coming back to it. It's organic. It's natural. Don't stress about it. It's not black and white.
Oh, wonderful points. Do you have any other final tip that you'd like to share on clutter on any area? Because we discuss it all here.
I am convinced that clutter is a quality of life issue. I see it in my clients' lives. I see it in my life. It's got a very profound effect on our quality of life, on our self-esteem, on our energy, on our courage, and it's worth investing time and energy trying to deal with it and find out what are the causes and improve our organization and our systems so that we can get through our days more like going through going from A to B in the city, and there's no traffic jams in front of you and you can just get where you need to go and just learning as we go along. And it's organic, and just keep learning and find people who inspire us, who make us feel good. There's no point looking at people who make us feel bad. There's so many influences out there. Narrow it down to a few that make us feel good and make us have the courage to move forward and who speak to us, because we all hear different things and we all need to hear different things. And find out who your mentors are. Find somebody who's good at one thing and learn it from them. You don't have to find someone who's good at everything. Everybody's good at something. Like you could have a colleague at work who you don't necessarily get along with, but they might be really, really good at bringing their lunch to work. Have a look and see what they're doing and figure out how they're doing it. What is it that they're doing to get their lunch to come to work? And you could learn from them. We can learn from everybody. Just figure out what it is you need to learn.
Wonderful. Now, please tell people how they can find out more information about you and anything else that's relevant that you'd like to share.
Thank you very much. One of the peculiarities about where I live and where I work is that I live in Montreal, in Quebec, in Canada, and the official language here is French. So the name of my company is in French, which throws an awful lot of Anglophones off, which is perfectly understandable. So the name of my company is Espace Efficace, which just means efficient spaces. The easiest way for people to find me on the internet is just Google my name, Allison Lush. And I'm on LinkedIn, and people can find me, and I can do virtual consulting with people via Skype. I'm happy to do that. I'm experienced doing that. I can help people here on site, but I can help people over the internet. I'm very happy to coach people, and I really think that people need to feel encouraged in life. So find anybody that they feel speaks to them and encourages them, and go for it.
Wonderful. I want to thank you, Allison, for your time today. I learned a lot, and I'm ready to implement that, and I want to...
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Julie. I think this is a wonderful series, and I congratulate you. I'm sure it's having a fabulous impact on so many people's lives.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I believe if we all let go of clutter, whether it's emotional, mental, spiritual, or physical, then we can share our gifts with the world. And as we help one another, we help everyone, and we create a much different world for us to all live in.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And I want to encourage everyone watching and listening to get out there, release some clutter, and create the life that you desire and deserve.
Thanks for joining us on Clearing the Clutter Inside and Out. You can find out more about Julie Caraccio and her services at reawakenyourbrilliance.com. We'll see you here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Remember, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step.